lurking tale there was at least twice already today, and umpteen times the days before. The black-capped sergeant saluted Felix, his measuring cup in hand, as though offering a grim toast, and then poured him a generous measure. Without thinking about it, Felix drank his due and no more, passing the remainder back. The slayer ignored the alemen, as he had the passage of bread and cheese. Felix wondered how long his former companion could go without food or water. At times Gotrek muttered to himself in what sounded like strains of Khazalid, the dwarf's well-guarded native tongue, but for most of their journey into the Middle Mountains he had been silent, glaring alternately between the valley sides and the soldiers ahead and behind. Determination alone seemed to sustain him now, but surely even the slayer's formidable constitution would have to fail eventually. Felix had no idea what he was going to do about it when it did. It was a rare cloudless night, the stars shining fitfully against a sky as clear as polished glass. A cluster of tents had been pitched against the frothing waters of the river, hugging to the scant protection afforded their flanks by a sharp curve in its course. Unfortunately, the ground further from the water was naught but solid rock, and after the first unsecured tents had threatened to slide into the river, the men had instead thrown down bedrolls with what amounted to a collective shrug and a thumbed nose to the harsh vagaries of fate. Felix had heard and read that generals moulded the armies they led in their own image, and he was somewhat gratified to see something of his own attitude in their response. The handful of soldiers hauled off their boots and braved the rapids to cleanse their aching feet. Others took advantage of the respite to refill canteens or rinse their clothes, but most simply slept where they fell. There were no fires. As the night chill set in, men shivered in their dreams, while those detailed to watch paced the picket of spears around the camp's perimeter rather than freeze. Felix took his own shift on the picket in the final frigid hours before dawn, huffing mist onto his gloved hands and peering up the starlit slopes. It still felt strange to look on a night sky that did not contain more sleep, the fell twin of the greater moon that tonight bathed the gorge in silver. He could not say that he missed the presence of the Chaos Moon, but even as the harbinger of evil that it was difficult to see its destruction as a portent for good. He considered raising the matter with Gotrek, for the slayer never slept these days. He sat enshrouded within his axe's ruddy aura, not so much watching as impatiently awaiting the dawn and the chance to move again. The hole in the slayer's unpatched eye reminded Felix of howling wolves, of goblin arrows, and ultimately of Kirsten, Felix's first great love, who had died in the same attack that had claimed Gotrek's eye. With a heart sigh, Felix clapped his hands and stared into the night. Had he not loved and lost enough since then? He could understand as well as anyone why Gustav wore Ulrika's armor, and why Kolya inked the same horse onto his bicep each morning. It was more comforting sometimes to hold on to the pain rather than let it go. He wondered if Gotrek felt the same way. As for all his race's inscrutable character, Felix had come roundabout to the conclusion that dwarfs and men were really not so dissimilar as each liked to think. They were all children of the Old Ones. If that high elf antiquarian with whom they had argued in a Marienburg tavern was to be believed. Their disagreement had later been taken outside, the scholar himself subsequently dumped unconscious into the canal. But in a way, Gotrek had proved the elf correct. They did all bleed the same colour. Felix chose not to disturb him. He felt that they had edged towards a détente of sorts, but it was still too difficult to talk to him. He didn't even know how he would start. He was looking up at the sky, idly entertaining the notion of drawing his journal out from under his shirt, when the sound of whispered voices from further along the palisade put to bed such civilized musings.
It is said that Emperor Karl Franz, imbued with the might of Sigmar, fought three demon princes in the battle for the Imperial Palace, whispered one man,
breath fogging around a dark silhouette, sat on an upturned box behind a rank of spears. Felix recognized the rural Hochlander accent of Corporal Herschel Mann.
"Felix once struck a wounding blow upon a bloodthirster of corn," said a second invisible man, not whispering in the conventional sense, but possessed of a voice that seemed to dwell in darkness.
Felix scowled and tried not to listen. He shouldn't have been surprised to learn that Max was responsible for the stories about him circulating throughout the company. His nephew would be so thrilled to learn that there wasn't a well-thumbed copy of his book hiding in someone's pack.
Truly, said Herschel.
Wielding a rune hammer that none but the heroes of the dwarfs had wielded before or since, and screaming Sigmar's name.
Felix snorted into his collar. At least he'd remembered to include the screaming.
I had no idea,
Herschel murmured quietly. Felix felt the man's eyes turn his way in the dark.
There are many more tales, said Max. It was Felix's own hand, for instance, that delivered the death blow to the corrupted dragon Skjallandir.
These are days of gods and heroes, Herschel agreed.
And men of destiny.
Felix rolled his eyes and tilted his head back to the stars. The stars didn't care who he'd been or what other men thought he was. They were the same here as they were over Altdorf or Middenheim. And for some reason that thought heartened him through to the dawn. The morning began with a shower, raindrops pattering over sheets and bedrolls and rousing stiff men from their slumber. Aching in their bones, the company broke camp and resumed their march. The Middle Mountains dragged by, vast and empty and seemingly unchanged by the days spent travelling through them, except perhaps by their creeping nearness. The clouds deepened in pitch through the day, until the sky was as black as burnt wood. The air grew cold and difficult to breathe, and several soldiers complained bitterly of headaches and of nosebleeds that would not stop. Felix had walked the World's Edge Mountains with Gotrek, and travelled the Silk Road across the Mountains of Morn, and he was accustomed to these conditions and did his best to help the men to adapt to them, to breathe deeply, to stop by the river often and drink. But even he was starting to feel the effects of what the dwarfs disparagingly called altitude sickness.
"How much further to Middenheim, do you think?"
asked Felix, setting his foot heavily on the ground and turning to watch as a gang of strong but tired men got behind Lanaxon's wagon to lift its back wheel from a furrow in the track. Lorin mouthed hoarse instructions from the driver's seat.
"Assuming this goes to Middenheim at all," muttered Gustav.
Felix thumbed his wedding ring slowly around his finger. He did not want to consider that possibility, but Gotrek's sense of direction had not proven itself to be especially reliable lately. He wondered if it could be connected in any way to what was happening to the world at large. Could the dwarf's loss of bearings be another symptom of the same malaise that afflicted Max? He couldn't answer that. These were questions beyond him, and he knew it. An apathetic cheer sounded over the roar of the water, as Lorin's back wheel crashed onto solid ground and the wagon again got moving. Felix looked over it to the jagged line of peaks. He shivered.
"I can't shake the feeling we're being watched."
"It's not just you," said Gustav. His eyes were bloodshot, and his left nostril scabbed from a recent bleed. He scratched his bandaged right hand incessantly at the puncture scars on his neck, eyes constantly on the move from peak to peak.
"I've not seen so much as a bird. But you can feel it, can't you?"
"We probably are being watched,"
Gotrek's voice rumbled from up ahead. The dwarf neither turned around nor slowed his pace, but the handful of soldiers between him and Felix clutched their weapons a little more tightly and pinned their gazes to the mountainside. Felix silently cursed his callousness.
"I thought that none but a dwarf could find these roads."
Gotrek chuckled mirthlessly.
"We're following the river, Manling. A blindfolded troll could make it this far. I would have thought it obvious that we are not yet on the old dwarf roads."
"How long until we are?"
"I don't know,"
Gotrek shrugged, glaring at the shadows over the too near horizon.
"I've never been this way before."
"We should make a plan for if we can't find this supposed road,"
Gustav murmured, eyes ahead, fingers scratching. I don't want to be walking through these mountains until we arrive out the other side in Nordland, or starve to death. I say give him 2 more days to find his way, then we turn back, make for the south.
We'll find it, said Felix, mustering a confidence that he did not the least bit feel, and fortifying it with a smile.
Gustav scoffed, but hadn't the energy to add anything further. Felix walked on, thinking about what Gotrek had said, the nape of his neck prickling with imagined arrows.
Beastman!
The cry rang out from the head of the marching column. Men and women scattered screaming in all directions, covered by the staccato crack of handgun fire. Puffs of powder smoke rose over the column, dispersing into the thin air as the volley echoed through the gorge. Felix huffed a dozen strides up the side of the valley, and then spun around, waving his arms in a cutting motion across his chest.
Stop! Cease fire!
The spindly pair of goats that some oxygen-deprived mind had mistaken for beastmen, lying in ambush, loped between the rocks and bounded away. Despite 2 dozen bullets being fired in their direction, it didn't look as though either one of them had been hit.
Pity, said Gotrek.
And at first Felix thought it was the lack of a herd of beastmen that was troubling him, but then the slayer turned on Gustav and grinned nastily.
It looks like we may starve to death yet.
Felix pinched the bridge of his nose and took a deep breath of air that felt more watered down than the ale in a Mootland tavern. Worries burned up what little air his brain was receiving. How much ammunition did they have left? Were they being tracked by the besiegers of Wolfenberg? And if so, had they heard those shots? He forced himself to breathe. He didn't think he could take much more of this. His heart was going to give out long before Gustav's deadline to cut their losses and turn back. Looking on the bright side, the journey had at least given him the time he needed to recover from the battle in the forest. A tension headache pulsed through his skull, and the tendons in his hands were as stiff as horses from hovering over the hilt of his sword. But he walked like a man with joints again, which was progress of sorts. His face no longer felt sore from Gotrek's punch, though his ego was still a little bruised, and though he was 1,000 leagues from a mirror, he doubted that a broken nose and a couple of cracked teeth would add anything to his looks. Not that there had been much interest in those lately. He sighed, suddenly miserable again. So much for the bright side. Gotrek issued a grunt and directed Felix's attention through the spreading powder plumes to the head of the column. A handful of the scouts had returned. Kolya ran ahead of them, whistling through his fingers before waving his hand above his head and then shouting enthusiastically as he gestured towards something further on. It was far too far for Felix to hear what the man said, river or no river, too far even to pick out the expression on his face. But he had neglected Gotrek's powers of hearing.
A dwarf township, said Gotrek,
running his thumb around the rim of his blade and eyeing Gustav's back with his tongue out.
Where we join our road.
Lorin Lanaxon parked his wagon in what looked like a courtyard, the longbeard craning his neck around and whistling in awe as he pulled up on the reins. Petrified grass fell apart like talc as the iron-rimmed wheels rolled to a standstill on the ancient flagstones. The generally stoic, mountain-bred mules snorted nervously in their traces. Linden jumped down and tried in vain to soothe them. There was something in the air. Men filed under the weather-smoothed stonework of what a few 1,000 years and some imagination could render back into a gatehouse. The strains of animal distress echoed back on them from the crumbling blocks of wall that surrounded them. Felix closed one hand over the hilt of his sword and the other around the neck of its scabbard as he looked around. The township was little more than a few 100 ancient structures huddled under the vastness of the mountain. The river ran through the edge of it, separating the courtyard and the remnants of a wall from the rest of the town, presumably as a defensive measure. Several bridges, only one of which was even close to being intact, made possible the crossing. The courtyard itself was slowly filling up with men, moving with superstitious care around fountains that had been weathered down to pitted grey stone, to which only the occasional dwarfish form could be ascribed from the corner of the eye. It was unnerving, the likenesses vanishing into the stone when looked upon directly. The mountain itself was dotted with old mine heads and fortifications, all now ruined, connected by a winding causeway that ran towards a broken citadel. The fortress was embedded into the rock at the summit, where it caught the last of the light as the sun dipped under the western peaks. Something metallic glinted from its battlements, but it was too far away to make it out. Felix assumed it was some defunct feature of the ancient dwarf hold, and returned his attention to the causeway. He assumed that this would be the path they would be following come the morning, in order to get onto the dwarf roads to Middenheim. For some reason, he found it difficult to follow the path all the way from top to bottom. There was clearly a start, and clearly an end, but his eyes simply couldn't seem to get from one to the other without getting lost. He wondered whether there was some manner of obfuscating runecraft at work, or merely clever design coupled with the effect of diminishing sunlight on tired eyes. As Felix watched and worried about what the next day would bring, the men set up camp under Corporal Mann's direction. Tents were erected within the square and fires lit. A picket of spears was established, both on the Soul Bridge and under the jagged, mouth-like opening through which they had passed the crumbling defensive wall. A pair of men hauled a sack of oats from Lauren's wagon between them and bore it towards the river to make gruel for the camp's supper. The clap of struck steel resounded between the Magdalen stones, and Felix drew a sharp breath, spinning back around and drawing Caragul a thumb's width from its sheath.
Dos canali, friend Gustav. Your skills improve.
Felix let the breath hiss out between his teeth and slid his blade back into its scabbard. He didn't know where these young men found their energy. A ring of cheering and laughing soldiers surrounded the two men as they traded blows. Kolya danced behind a curved Ordinka short sword, held in his weaker left hand, his right held behind his back, his colourful hemp coat jangling as he ducked and rolled. A slow altitude bleed trickled down Gustav's nose, accentuating the grim focus on his face. His longer sabre slashed purposefully through the air, excepting the odd occasion when the Kislevite fancied a cheer and raised a ringing clang with a parry.
Keep your distance, Empire men. You have reach on me. Use it.
The duel continued without Felix to watch it. There was no need. Kolya was the better swordsman by a distance, perhaps better even than himself, although he liked to think that he could have taken the former lancer in a fair contest in his prime. The softer tap of metal on stone drew his attention from the revels and towards Lauren Lanaxon, who shuffled towards him, pausing occasionally to rap on a piece of masonry with the hammerhead grip of his cane.
My great-grandfather was part of an expedition to these mountains from Carrick Cadrin. He would have been younger then even than you, Herr Jaeger.
The longbeard gripped his cane and looked up to the ruins that dominated the northern skyline, his eyes wide with emotion, torchlight stitched across the bite mark on his face.
To think that I stand upon the very stones that he once did.
Although on a logical level, Felix had realized that there must be many dwarfs younger than his own 50 years, he nevertheless still thought of them all as wise old longbeards, or great slabs of permanence like Gotrek. Felix wasn't sure whether the reminder diminished that impression, or simply made him feel older and tireder than he already had just a moment before. What he could appreciate, however, were the timescales that the dwarf was alluding to. 4 generations of that long-lived race could mean millennia. Felix had personally met dwarfs who had lived through the last Great War 2 centuries ago and had still been going strong. He wondered what had happened to those dwarfs, old Borek and Prince Hargrim, or even Malachi Mackayson, for that matter. All dead, probably. The thought depressed him, though not nearly as much as he felt it should. Felix pressed his gloved hand to the wall as if it might let him feel the same mix of awe and wonder as it had the longbeard. He felt nothing, just a prickling down the nape of his neck, as if an assassin stood behind him with a crossbow loaded and aimed. He shivered. It was nothing.
Don't tell me, none of them came back alive.
Oh no, they all returned. Penniless and ashamed and pitied as well-meaning fools. But alive.
What did they come here to find? If these peaks are as empty as everyone seems to think they are. Longbeard hesitated. His face ticked, and he rubbed his beard with his hand to soothe it while he hurriedly located his pipe and bit on its long wooden stem. Felix heard the wood splinter, and the Longbeard pulled it morosely from his lips.
I don't know how to describe it. There's no human word for it.
None at all.
It's never come up. I don't think it's ever been discussed with someone who's not a dwarf.
Lorin nibbled on the fractured pipe stem and shrugged.
To be completely honest, Herr Jaeger, we barely talk about it amongst ourselves, since so few believe that it exists at all.
Felix sighed. Sometimes he missed Gottfrek's economy of words.
It is, Khazad Drengazi. It's a temple, and legend says that it lies somewhere within these mountains.
Felix could not entirely say why, but he felt that those two words of Khazalid conveyed a depth of meaning that Lorin's well-intentioned explanation could not give. Before he could inquire further, Gottrek stomped over, his axe resting lightly against his shoulder. The slayer jerked a thumb back, indicating the ruins behind him.
What are you standing around for, Madeline? Do you want to find the Middenheim Road, or don't you?
Wouldn't Collier or one of his scouts be better suited? Asked Felix. Not at all sure he was keen on the idea of spending the coming night alone with Gottrek, picking through some desolate ruin. Gottrek muttered something into his beard, turning slightly as if to ensure Felix couldn't read his lips, and produced an exaggerated shrug.
Come or don't, Manling. It's your choice.
Felix looked up at the sky, thinking of all the reasons that he absolutely shouldn't leave the camp and accompany the slayer, then swore and strode after him.
Someone had to, he told himself. It might as well be him.
Chapter 7 The Ruined Dwarf Hold. Gottrek crouched before a granite block, hidden away within the corner of a ruined wall at the riverside end of a wide, empty street. Felix stood nervously at the slayer's back, fingers fidgeting around the grip of his sword. The buildings were constructed in what he had come to think of as the dwarfish fashion, massive blocks laid atop one another with such expertise and precision that there was no sign of mortar, and, by Mansleeb's haunting light, it was next to impossible for his human eyes to discern the joins. There was an eerie stillness about this place, a graveyard serenity that the faraway murmur of the river could not detract from. It was impossible to stand here, surrounded by such age, and not wonder at the forgotten lives that had touched it. Who had they been? What had they done? Did anything of them survive in the world he knew? The romantic in him, perhaps, staring into the cosmos and praying for some sign of stability. The minds of men weren't built to consider such sweeping timescales as this, the kind that diluted the thinker's bloodline to water and eroded his most enduring legacy to dust on the wind. To stand here was to be forcibly reminded of one's place and prominence in a world already steeped in history. Felix wondered if Karl Franz, or Magnus the Pious, or even Sigmar himself would have felt the same way in his shoes. The thought should probably have shamed him for its boldness, but for some reason it did not. Do you ever feel that we're on the wrong side of history?
No.
Felix smiled weakly, glancing over his shoulder to the pricks of light and occasional voices from the camp across the river. He could smell cooking oats. His stomach tightened with hunger. Some other disturbed sense made him shudder. Doesn't all of this make you wonder about the people who lived here? Will this be us one day? Is this what will be left of the Empire if we fail?
Middenheim won't look nearly so pretty in 5,000 years.
Felix examined the ruins with a new perspective. Could they really be so old? Now he was looking at them in this way, he recognized that this town had none of the features he had come to associate with dwarf settlements. There were no gyrocopter towers, such as the dwarfs used for swift communications and provisioning of isolated outposts like this one. He had seen none of the great stone bastions used for housing cannons. Felix knew that the dwarfs had taught the secrets of gunpowder to men and helped to found the engineering schools that, as much as the colleges of magic, had made the Empire the force it was. Felix clung sadly to that final thought. Was. Was it possible that there had been a time when even the dwarfs themselves had not possessed such knowledge? It seemed difficult to believe. Although it made sense intellectually, he had simply assumed that dwarfs were gifted with an inherent racial understanding of such secrets. The realization that they had mastered them over centuries of methodical trial and error only deepened Felix's respect for their achievements. It made him more determined than ever that something of their civilization be spared. With one more glance over his shoulder, he joined Gottrick in his examination of the marker stone. The granite was green with age, and framed by a thicket of brambles that had pushed through the softer stones amongst which it had been set. The runes carved into it were still legible, however, once Gottrick had pulled down the obscuring weeds. At least Felix hoped they were. They were just cuts in the rock to him, and had he not been here with Gottrick, he probably would have dismissed them as something scratched into it by a passing bird.
"It's Klinkerhorn, Manling. Rune script, but very old. It's difficult to be sure, but I think we're on the right track."
The dwarf looked up and peered down the street, his dark adapted eyes piercing the gloom in a way that Felix could only envy.
"Let's head on and see if we can find another. There's dozens of old roads heading into the mountains, and I don't want to be 2 days out before realizing we're on the wrong one."
Felix nodded his agreement as the slayer stood up and stomped down the road. He paused to examine the rune script. There was something mournful about it, in need of remembrance. Could it really be something as simple as a road sign they were following? "Empire Strasse, Middenheim, 125 miles. The outlandish thought made Felix smile as he turned away and after his former companion. It felt good to have a destination again. It was something to cling to, and that was hope of a kind. Their footsteps echoed through the ruins. Gottrick was actually being cautious, Felix realized, but even so his hobnailed boots scratched at the stillness like climbing pythons on bare stone. Felix glanced over his shoulder, convinced for a moment that he had heard the footfalls of another moving in parallel through the ruins. He dismissed it as the work of his imagination. Either that, or his own too loud footsteps being rebounded back at him. His mail shirt no longer seemed entirely adequate, and he drew his cloak over his shoulders, as though the rugged Sudanland wool was a welcome layer of added protection for his back. Felix held his sword a little more closely than he had before, matching the slayer's shorter stride so that their feet hit the road in unison. There was loneliness here of a kind he had not felt anywhere else, not in the misted swamps of Albion, nor even on the lifeless sands of Nehekara. These ruins were steeped in it, like stones in the desert that had absorbed it all day and now radiated it at night. He mentioned the feeling to Gottrick.
"Even in my people's golden age, when Karazakarak could put a throng of 50,000 upon the field and not suffer one less hammer at her forges, there were naught but a few thousand here. They made a go of it. They were dwarfs, but they left in the end."
Felix strained his eyes into the dark that filled the crumbling relics on either side, as if by willpower he could make them see as Gottrick's could. His imagination populated the shadows with goblin raiders, charging through the streets on their wolf mounts while dwarfs screamed and their city was looted and burned. But Felix couldn't see any obvious indications of battle damage. Skaven, perhaps. His heart beat a little faster at the thought of that vile, duplicitous race. He did not think himself a hateful man, or a coward, but he hated and feared the ratmen more than any other horror he had encountered. They were poisonous, saboteurs and assassins. They had murdered his father, nearly killed him more than once, and, but for a fortuitous twist of fate here and there, had very nearly brought down the Empire long before now. Even in failure, they had burnt half of Nuln to the ground and destroyed the gunnery school. He thought back to that third set of footsteps that he had convinced himself was just his imagination. Sigmar, he prayed, tightening his grip on his sword. Let it be Skaven. What happened? He managed to ask, after a few minutes of picturing what he would do to the rat he found between him and Cat.
Nothing happened, Manling. There was just nothing here worth staying for.
The inherent sadness of that caused Felix's shoulders to droop, and he eased his grip on his sword. And the temple that Lauren mentioned? Gotrek gave a disparaging snort.
Ah, the witless old fool. It is not a temple, it's a fortress.
What does the name mean? Gotrek pursed his lips and considered.
There are some words that your language does not have meanings for. Suffice to say, Manling, that it does not exist, or it would have been found by now. The road we look for was not built by the dwarfs that once lived here, but is one of the dozens laid by the explorers who came hunting the legend of Khazad Drengazi.
Gotrek pointed northwards and up. Felix could see nothing, except perhaps the glint of something metallic catching the light of the stars, but took it on faith that the slayer was indicating the citadel on the mountain.
The last dwarfs to abandon the old dwarf hold travelled north on one such road, and took it to your lands, or what would eventually become your lands. It was they who helped the humans turn Middenheim into the fortress she is. They gave her walls, dug her mines, and even laid the designs for the funicular that serves the summit today.
Felix's eyes widened, but he said nothing. He had given up trying to comprehend the age of this place. The Fauschlag had been an unassailable stronghold long before Sigmar turned the disparate human tribes into an empire.
Those early miners found a labyrinth of caves and tunnels within the mountains, Gotrek went on. One was extended to meet the road from here.
Gotrek snorted thoughtfully, dropping to his knees to inspect another of the roadside rune markers that Felix had not even spotted was there.
Although I doubt Grimnir himself could tell you why.
So that was how Gotrek planned to pass under the Chaos Hordes that undoubtedly besieged the city of the White Wolf and get inside. A gust of wind from the north carried an eerie moan through the ruins. Dare he even hope? Was that wise? Building a back door into your fortress, I mean? Who else might stumble onto these same roads? Gotrek scraped moss from the marker with his thumbnail and grunted,
Impossible.
Felix wished he could be so sure. Before he could open his mouth to seek further reassurance, Gotrek raised his hand for quiet and sniffed the air. Gotrek licked his finger and held it up to find the wind, turning in its direction, north, down the street, and glared into the dark. Felix bit his lip, sword raised.
What is it? Shush. I thought I smelled something.
The dwarf turned to Felix, who shook his head. He still had that cooked oats smell in his nose, and he suspected that even had he not, it would have been difficult to detect much beyond the gentle reek of his own unwashed clothing.
I told you, you wanted Kolya, he murmured. He's good at this sort of thing.
The Kislevite had formerly made his living hunting monstrous game across Troll Country and the Goromadni Mountains, trading the prized carcasses with the Kurgan-speaking tribes that dwelt there. He didn't have an old man's tired eyes or aching joints, nor did he have the same need for a bedroll and a fire and a cupful of gruel that Felix did. More importantly, he was Gotrek's rememberer now, and his place was surely here. Was it the man's laxity or Gotrek's conscious choice that had Felix here in his stead? The slayer muttered gruffly and then fell silent, standing up and crossing over the road as if Felix hadn't opened his mouth at all.
Over here, Manling.
Gotrek's lowered voice called back from under the shadows.
I don't think we're alone.
Gustav Jaeger and two Free Company men in soiled burgundy and gold, overlaid with plate armor and cloaks, crouched around the footprint left in the soft mud. It was a little larger than a man's. Gustav sank his finger into the print, eyeing the rushing ribbon of pearly white froth that roared by them. He had the strange notion to taste the muck on his finger, but resisted and shook his hand dry with a scowl. He was being watched, judged, and it was making him jumpy.
What are you thinking, friend Gustav?
I'm thinking I'll not be sleeping tonight. Collier grinned and squatted down on the opposite side of the print, tracing it with his finger as though mentally mapping its shape. The shells and pebbles tied into his coat by coloured ribbons bounced softly off one another as he moved. The square patches of hemp that made up his clothes were grey in the dark, but no less bright by contrast to their surroundings. A freshly drawn henna in the style of a horse glittered with a faintly metallic tint from his forearm. He stood, planting his own foot into the mud beside the print and backing away to examine it.
Larger than a man, and heavier. See how deep it is compared to mine?
Gustav studied the print intently. He was no tracker. He had peppered Collier and those men he was expected to lead with questions on the subject, but there was no escaping the fact that he had not travelled anywhere without the aid of a road and a hired guide until the Battle of Badenhof had forced him. His skills would never match those of other men he knew. Men like his uncle. Nevertheless, the print looked to him to be no more than a few hours old.
Some sort of monster, growled one of his men,
a scarred greybeard named Sturm, with a sword across his bent legs and a half-cocked pistol in hand.
I don't know,
Collier admitted,
but I have seen prints like this before. On the Oblast.
The Kislevite scanned the opposite shore, drawing his bow halfway taut to sight along the shaft. The tassels attached to its recurved ends fluttered lightly in the breeze. The Middle Mountains were a long way from the northern oblast, but Gustav could see the huntsman's instinct at work. To Gustav, the darkened ruins looked insectile, giant spiders on segmented legs of black limestone. They hugged the mountainside as though waiting to scurry down and overwhelm them.
Do you see something?
He hissed. Collier lowered his bow, brow knotted in consternation. Gustav swallowed nervously. Something that Collier couldn't spot was infinitely more worrying than anything he could.
Double watch tonight, said Collier. Eyes on bridge, and keep distance from river.
He turned to Gustav and pursed his lips, a fatalistic shrug so subtle it didn't even disturb the shells in his coat.
And for sake of your uncle, pray that it is interested more in us than him.
Felix covered his nose and mouth against the scent of rot. It filled the rubble-strewn portico that Gotrek had led him under, clinging to the weeds that grew up like a cocoon around the sickly green corpse that lay towards the back of the room. It was a goblin. Its foot was clamped between the jaws of a bear trap that had been hidden amongst the rubble. Judging from the state of the wretch's fingernails and the bloody scratches between its ankle and knee, Felix reasoned that it had spent a good portion of its final hours trying to claw its way free. It was dark and beginning to bloat, and what looked like tiny bite marks were evident all over its body. Felix took a step forward, rubble crunching underfoot and sending rats squealing through the undergrowth for the far corners of the structure. His heart thumped. Edging forwards, he crouched beside the corpse. A prickly thicket of dandelions held up the goblin's body like a cushion, only its strangler's hands and arrow-shaped head hanging over the edges. Its eyes and lips had been eaten. Felix covered his mouth again and turned back to the doorway, where Gotrek had remained, wedged under the doorframe, axe held lightly in one hand and scanning the opposite side of the street with his one good eye.
I doubt this poor thing has been following anyone for at least a week.
Pity for a goblin, manling. For shame.
With a sigh, Felix sheathed his sword, and instead drew a short knife from a leather pocket inside his right boot. He used it to clear away some of the weeds and rot around the bear trap, and frowned. Even under the merest whisper of moonlight, the sharp steel gleamed. There were no markings anywhere on it to suggest that it had ever been worked by a tool. It was, quite simply, some of the finest craftsmanship Felix had ever seen.
Left by one of the expeditions that passed this way, no doubt, said Gotrek,
then returned his gaze to the street. The slayer's wariness was setting Felix on edge.
Is there something out there?
Gotrek grunted, non-committal, and without turning towards him, jabbed the eye of his axe up to the ceiling. From the outside, it had looked like this building had another couple of stories. though the thought of traipsing through rats and darkness and who knew what else to find a set of stairs that might not even hold his weight was strangely unappealing.
"Why don't you go take a look, Manling?"
said Gotrick absently, settling in to watch.
"I'll just wait down here."
Morzana, prophetess of the Dark Master, had seen the moment that a dozen mutant knights in full battle regalia had piled into her chamber 100 times, long before she finally heard the clatter of their footsteps up the stairs of the tower she had adopted as her own. The only furnishing was an unused mattress of bound straw that lay against a wall, more for the appearance of it, the acceptance of a kind gesture, than for its utility. The rest of the floor was occupied by fragments of stone that had crumbled from the ceiling. Weeds hung down, ropey creepers playing against her small, dark horns as she paced beneath them. She walked to the window. It was wide and tall, installed for the view rather than for defense. And that was one of the reasons she had chosen it, and no other had wanted it. She leaned out. The mountains were felt rather than seen, a cold breeze from a depthless void. The ruined township lay against it, a stitch in a black cloth. The stream was a thin gurgle in the distance. She frowned, then slid a few inches to the left. Here. There came a knock at the door and she smiled brightly, Delphic fangs catching the moonlight. That had been unexpected, a nuance that prophecy could conceal. She turned her hunched back to the window and smoothed down the glittering black silk of her dress, straightening the jet spider brooch that held it all in place. She had played the Ungol wise woman for many years, and it was a comforting guise to inhabit. It suited her. She had enjoyed the wandering, the isolation, the empty miles of Oblast separating herself from the dreams of others. The fear in which even those who had ridden countless leagues to receive her wisdom had held her was something she had enjoyed less, but which she had always respected. She had earned their fear, and it had suited her too. And even in the Empire, where men would not know an Ungol from a Ropsmen from a Gospodar, the instinct to fear a crone in black remained.
"It is open,"
she answered, voice as clear as moonlight, despite the age evident in her appearance. A square-jawed warrior, with a rectangular iron shield in each of his two left hands, pushed through the door and stepped to one side to admit the immense armoured form of High Tsar Königsmann. The one-time Grand Master of Wulfenberg's Knights of the Bull wore his stigmata with grace, but the signs of the Dark Master's favour were there. A large man, he was simply immense in the full plate and circuit of his fallen order. But the proportions were not quite right. His huge chest and thick arms were oversized in comparison to his legs. His bovine nose was too flat and broad, as though it had been squashed, and a thin down of black hair was just beginning to spread out from his beard and fringe. His fearsome bull-horned helm he held under arm.
"Did you have trouble sleeping, prophetess?"
grunted the High Tsar, nodding towards the bed.
"Always, my lord,"
Morzana answered with a glassy smile.
"It sounded as though you were having a bad dream."
Morzana sighed. In her mind's eye, she saw a dark Templar, the rupture in his breastplate where it would be, the blood that would dye his white circuit red.
"It was not mine."
Königsmann grunted again, as men did in the presence of one who saw their futures more clearly than they saw their own past, taking his helm in both hands and rolling it between his palms. As he did so, the knights that prophecy had promised Morzana piled in. Moonlight glittered across bared blades, lifted the white from the black on the once-proud tabards of Ostland's boldest. Horned helms and fiendishly spiked knee and elbow guards tangled the slender spaces between them like branches in an ancient wood. And not all of them were components of the warrior's armour. Slathering, muscular tongues glowed with faint bioluminescence in the dark. Pincer claws clacked open and shut like the vacillations of some predatory flower. Tentacles thicker than a strong man's neck flexed and slithered across man mountains of steel plate. For as long as there had been men in Ostland, Small bands of mutants had lived a nomadic life in the harsh isolation of the Middle Mountains. These men were not they. They had fled with their master from the doom of Wolfenberg, and had forged for him an army worthy of their patron. And where they rode, the seed and the shadow of Belakor had gone with them.
The outsiders are still coming,
Königsmann hissed suddenly, striding past Morzana to the window and looking out. The Dark Knight scowled, stiffly lowering his helm to the weathered window ledge. The alpine wind ruffled his beard and drew goosebumps from his darkening, demon-touched skin.
Is it him? This mortal warrior that can strike such terror in a god's heart?
Morzana closed her eyes, summoning the image of a flame-crested dwarf and a handsome swordsman in a red cloak to her mind. An almost maternal warmth filled her. She did not know whether this particular vision was past, present, or future, for this pair had touched her life at every stage. But for them, Morzana would not be here at all, for she could still see the doomed world in which Morzana the child had perished in the purging fires of Mordheim. If only the Dark Master's nemesis could see what she saw, could know how, through her, he had changed the world, and how he would change it yet. His destiny illuminated the heavens like a star, and gods and men alike ignored it at their peril.
He is Wanderer,
she whispered, opening her eyes and banishing the vision from her mind.
He is Warrior and Demon Slayer. His fate will shape the world, and others beyond it. He is to be the Dark Master's downfall.
And he wishes to escape this destiny?
Morzana parted her lips into a soft smile of devil-spine teeth. How was it that everyone bar her continually misunderstood the nature of fate? It was not an arrow that struck at random and could be avoided with luck. It was what would be. It was what had to be.
If anyone has the power to try, it is him. If anyone has the arrogance to believe they can succeed, it is him.
Very well, said Königsmann heavily. We'll take their scouts while they're separated, and then hit their camp while they sleep. Spread the word.
He jabbed his finger into the double-shielded knight's breastplate.
Command the ambush personally. The Dark Master will arise.
Aye, my lord, said the knight,
marching from the chamber and taking half of the warriors with him.
Can you tell me any more of how we will triumph?
Said Königsmann, turning to Morzana.
Triumph, my lord?
Morzana asked coldly. In her mind she saw the ruptured breastplate, the blood on white. There was another reason she had selected this tower for her quarters, despite suffering neither cold nor fatigue.
My lord,
one of the knights muttered, a heavy-set man in a scythe-edged harness of articulated plate with a stone bull pectoral clamped over his chest. His visored helm was open to reveal yellow eyes and a thin moustache. He scratched at the side of his head, mirroring something that had appeared on Königsmann's. It was a red dot. The tip of a lance of light that, from its angle, appeared to originate from a higher tower, or possibly from the mountain itself. That she did not know. With an irritated expression, the High Tsar bent his head and swatted at the dot. His hand passed through it. The dot danced, unperturbed, over his temple.
You were kind to me, High Tsar, said Morzana. You deserved a more caring master.
The thunderous report of what sounded like a small cannon rumbled through the ruined township, just as Felix threw his shoulder into the pine door for the third and final time and burst through onto a viewing platform. It looked like it had been a belfry. The walls were open on all sides, except for narrow corner supports that held up a tiled roof. There was no sign of a bell, but Felix could see the stanchion where it had used to be. He imagined it being used to sound shift changes to the workers in the mines above, or to alert them to an attack. Felix ran to the nearest ledge and peered out. It was like looking out to sea on a moonless night. It was just shapes, the whisper of an icy breeze, the fading echoes of a gunshot, and... what was that? He held his breath and listened. Yes, He could definitely hear running feet, the clink of mail, the clap of swords in their scabbards. He blinked hard and tried again to see. For a moment he wondered if his eyesight was finally going the way of his joints. Then he scowled and disregarded it. He doubted that a slow decline into decrepitude was something he was going to have to worry about. Who had taken that shot? There were a few handgunners amongst Mann's troop, but none of them carried anything big enough to make a noise like that, and all of them were back in the camp anyway. Felix's stomach dropped as the upshot of that hit him. He and Gottschalk had managed to separate themselves from their own force and walk straight into a potential enemy. He had to warn Gottschalk. He pulled back from the ledge, just as the slayer's bellicose roar from the street below heralded the clangor of steel on steel. Felix swore. Gottschalk had sent him up here on purpose to get him out of the way. He clutched his sword and turned to run back the way he had just come. Damn that slayer, and damn his oath. Chapter 8. Ambushed. Felix clattered down the stairs, bouncing off the square walls of the stairwell in his haste. The steps were too broad, the angle too low, designed for bigger feet and shorter legs than his, and his descent felt more like that of a stone dropped down a well than a run. He could hear the sounds of battle from outside. The stone walls muffled parts, but seemed to amplify others, filling the weed-constricted space with wild shouts that came in answer to challenges that Felix had not heard, and the ring of shields struck by phantom blows. He half fell back into the portico where he had left Gottschalk, and almost landed on top of a grotesque pair of warriors. One was a heavily armoured hunchback with a battle-axe in both hands, and a porcine snout protruding from a closed hood. The other was a willowy fighter with purplish skin and a pair of crab-like claws in place of her hands. From the looks of shock on their inhuman faces, they were as surprised to see Felix as Felix was to see them, and in the short time available to think, he realized that they must have entered through the back with the idea of ambushing the slayer in the street. And then there was no more time for thinking. Expelling his pre-battle nerves with a shout, Felix punched his pommel stone into the hunchback's nose before the mutant could raise his axe, using the momentum of his descent to dogpile the heavier warrior to the ground. Somewhere along the way, Felix had drawn a knife from his boot, and he drove it through the mutant's throat. The hunchback gargled, arterial blood squirting over Felix's fingers. He looked up to mark the other fighter, and cried out at the sight of an enormous chitinous pincer streaking for his neck. Felix pulled back out of reach, and then rolled off the dying hunchback, ripping Caragul from its sheath as he rose. A spasm of muscle pain shot up his right side, but he ignored it, raising his sword to parry as Willow Crab pounced over her stricken comrade and attacked. Shards of cherry-black chitin flew as the first claw almost punched Felix's sword from his hand. Gritting his teeth against the pain coming from all quarters of his tired old body now, Felix backed off, clasping his ringing right hand with his left to wield the Templar sword two-handed and direct the second claw stroke into the wall above his shoulder. The hideous mutation chewed through the rock as though it were stale bread. The mutant advanced under a barrage of clacking pincers, left, right, left, like some loathsome steam-powered threshing machine given lithe flesh. Felix couldn't back away fast enough. His heel hit something unpleasantly soft. The goblin, he realized with disgust, dodging and feinting and using every trick of footwork he knew or could devise on the spot to get out from under the mutant's claws, slashing across her ribs as he spun away and into the space he had cleared with his retreat. The mutant hissed in pain and turned after him, tongues of purple flesh licking out from the edges of the wound to pull it closed. Felix brought his sword up in resignation. Why did the dark powers bestow the most powerful gifts? The glint of something sharp caught Felix's eye amidst the weeds and rubble. Realization hit, and with an unworthy smile he positioned it between him and the advancing mutant, and angled his sword into a guard. The mutant lunged for him, her foot landing on the metallic disc that Felix had seen. There was a violent snap as the jaws of the second foothold trap bit shut over her ankle. She shrieked and swung a claw, dragging her mangled leg and the steel trap along behind her, either by accident or intent on positioning herself between Felix and the door to the street where Gottschalk fought.
"Who'll perish the Dark Master's downfall?"
she whispered.
"Over my dead body," said Felix.
He had no idea who the Dark Master was or what interest it had in Gotrek, but right then he didn't care. Willowcrab grinned like a death mask with far too many teeth as Felix went on the attack. Her movements were restricted by the trap that had bitten through her leg to the bone, but she was still quick. She was skillful, too, in a top-heavy sort of way, but Felix was better. He had been doing this longer than this woman had been alive, and he knew his sword better than most men knew their wives. He scowled, Caragul slicing through Willow Crab's belly, then her arm, then her thigh. He knew it better than he knew his wife. Tentacles of semi-regenerated flesh rippled from numerous cuts, and Felix drew back for a killing thrust up through the ribcage, when the thump of running feet dragged his attention back towards the staircase. More filthy-looking mutants in slimy cloaks and scratched leather armor piled in through the same back entrance that Willow Crab and Hunchback must have used. They came with a motley parade of hatchets, spears, and nets, and possessed no physical armament as impressive as those he had already dealt with. But that wasn't going to matter, given the sheer weight of numbers on their side. A claw snapped a hair's breadth from his ear, and Felix retreated towards the nearest corner with his sword up. He had always expected to die this way. Spoken aloud amongst comrades and friends, it sounded terribly brave and honourable, but Felix didn't feel either. In that moment, what he wanted with all his heart was to see his wife and child one more time. Just once. Was that too much to ask this world for? The first of the newcomers came for him, cloak billowing out beneath it with the undulations of what appeared to be squid-like tentacles in place of legs, and levelled its fisherman's spear to impale Felix like a salmon. Felix brought his sword around instinctively to parry. The spear shaved across the blade, wood peeling from the shaft as it went, and Felix kicked the mutant in the groin. Three more spilled around the first, brandishing axes and knives. Too many. More still were streaming in through the passage that fed past the stairs. One of the cloaked figures in particular drew Felix's attention, despite the important proximity of several others. This one was tall, walking with hooded head held high with the aid of a staff gripped in two dark hands. Felix felt what little light there was in the room drawn towards that figure. The hairs in Felix's skin pulled at their roots, and even his eyes seemed to want to leap out of their sockets. He would have shut them had he dared.
Sigma, Felix breathed.
The shadows that cloaked the figure opened out like the sepals of a pure white rose. Long ivory robes blazed with golden runes. The simple staff writhed in the man's grip, a wraith-like serpent coiling out of the wood like a djinn from a lamp and hissing. The mutants screamed and covered their eyes, but Felix, strangely, didn't feel the intense light at all. If anything, it was restorative, bleaching the aches from his bones. He felt better than he had in weeks. The wizard muttered something in an arcane tongue and moved his fingers swiftly before his eyes. Shielding her face behind one giant pincer, Willow Crab leapt for him, only for the wizard to display an open palm of brilliantly radiating fingers, a wave of light purging the shrieking mutant of her stigmata limb by limb, before a second wave blasted her into incandescent motes mid-air. Before the first sparkling fleck had hit his face, the wizard had slipped into a new incantation, voice rising and hands moving furiously as tiny spheres of diamond brilliance burst out of the ether around him and whizzed unerringly towards their terrified targets, mowing the mutants down like weeds. The scent of metal solder and immolated flesh filled Felix's nostrils. He ducked, several of those magical bullets shooting alarmingly close to him, but remarkably none of them struck. He watched from a crouch as the last mutant warrior, scrambling over the bodies piled on the stairs, took a white bolt in the back, spasmed, and then collapsed. Felix looked over the burnt carpet of dead in shock and no little horror. Max Schreiber faded slowly back into the afterglow of the carnage he had wrought. He pulled his hood back over his head, concealing the misting of his face and the inexorable eclipse of his eyes. Shadowy tendrils arced between his fingers and the darkening folds of his hood. He took his once again plain yew staff and leaned on it wearily.
"I wanted to tell you about a dream I had," he said blankly.
I'm sorry, what?
"I dreamed of a hunter," Max went on,
As if unaware of his surroundings, or the lightstorm he had just unleashed on the mutants that still sizzled around him.
He was beset by beasts of land and air and sea. Hunter Felix, don't you see? Hunter? Jaeger? That is the meaning of your name.
Felix stood up slowly and took a deep breath. He reaffirmed his grip on his sword. The belfry had been cleared, but he could still hear the sounds of battle outside, and even Gottschalk, particularly in his exhausted state, couldn't fight alone forever. He waved a hand in front of the wizard's face. Listen to me, Max. Do you know where you are?
On the path of destiny, Max answered with a faint, chilling smile,
looking through Felix's hand and deep into his eyes.
I dreamt that I flew again, you and I seeking the ancient power of the dwarfs. But this time it was I that died. I think that maybe I have some role to play in your destiny after all.
Felix withdrew his hand and repositioned it around his sword for a two-handed grip. When Max was like this, it wasn't worth the effort of trying to talk to him. Gottschalk has a destiny, Max. I'm just me, the same old Felix, and the hunter thing is pretty tenuous. Collier's a hunter.
Max shrugged. Who?
Shaking his head, Felix squelched through the charred gristle towards the doorway.
Wait, said Max dreamily,
and then with a shout, Felix, get back! Felix saw the flash of a struck match from the opposite side of the street. Not enough warning on its own, but thanks to Max's prescient shout, he was already diving across the doorframe and into cover. He hit the ground flat as a torrent of shells from what must have been a larger caliber variant of a repeater handgun blistered the ground where he had just been and chewed the stonework surrounding the doorway into an unrecognizable shape. He breathlessly kissed his wedding ring in thanks for his life as he dragged his feet in from the doorway. With a whine like an exhaling dragon, the storm of fire ceased. A thin drizzle of rock fell from what was left of the doorframe. Felix felt himself tense as he waited for the next barrage. He had encountered weapons like this before, but rarely, the sort of experimental ordnance that would normally be deployed only to the largest battlefields, and even then under the careful stewardship of the most competent master engineers. Felix had never faced followers of chaos with this kind of weaponry before. It was something new. Felix wasn't at all sure he liked it.
Move away from the wall, said Max,
crouching down and laying a hand onto a patch of weeds that stood up between a pair of burnt, misshapen corpses. A pulse of jade light passed down the wizard's arm and into the ground. Felix held his breath, but nothing happened. An accelerating whir from outside told him that the volley gun was about to fire again. He rolled his head back to examine the ruined stonework. It wouldn't take another salvo.
I said move away, said Max.
Felix could feel the ground beneath his elbows shudder, as though it were being slowly wrenched apart. The stonework groaned. From the corner of his eye, he saw one of the mutants rising. Felix gasped. But it wasn't the mutant. It was the weeds underneath it swelling. The same macabre scene was being enacted throughout the room, mutated corpses giving way to vigorous green growth. Max mouthed an oaken creak of an incantation, and the plants responded. The front wall turned green. Mosses and vines knotted together like green steel ringlets in a mail coat. Felix shuffled around and wriggled back, cringing from a questing root that squirmed across his thigh. Before Felix's disbelieving eyes, the wall turned thicker and greener, until there was not a single stone visible at all. Over the engorged groan of growing plant life, spinning gun barrels screamed. Felix dropped himself back to the ground and covered his face under both arms, flinching with every sap-soft